The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Good evening, everyone. And is it loud enough? Maybe a little bit louder? Let's see. Does that seem okay now? Okay. So, I would like to discuss a very important topic for Buddhist practice, and that is that of letting go. And sometimes that's a specialty of at least a theme for Buddhist teachers. Whether it's a specialty of what we can do, that's another topic. But it's a beautiful idea, beautiful movement of the mind, beautiful practice to let go, but it needs to be done wisely. And so I want to talk a few different aspects of this topic of letting go, so you appreciate it more. And a little bit by talking about what do you do if you can't let go? And if you feel like you want to let go or should let go, what do you do then? So sometimes there's confusion around this topic of letting go. If what people understand is that letting go is to letting go of something. So, if I cling to this glass of water that I'm drinking, and you tell me to let go of it, and I think I'm supposed to let go of the glass, it would be a mess here if I drop it. But that's kind of saying that it's the problem. It kind of implies the problem is with the glass. What I'm supposed to let go of is the clinging I have to the glass of water. I don't have to let go of the glass of water. I can still use it, but I can let go of the clinging to it, the grasping onto it, the clutching it. And so when we hear this idea of letting go, some people think, well, oh, no, I don't want to let go of things. I don't have much to begin with, or what's wrong with these things? And it's not necessarily wrong with the things, but where the suffering comes is when we clutch onto it or grip it tight. And that tight grip by which the mind holds onto their ideas, the mind holds onto things, that hurts in itself, and it's very limiting. It limits our abilities to be wise, it limits our ability to see, to maneuver freely in the world. It's a real constriction. And so the movement of letting go is to let go of the clinging. And why that is important is that even good things can be clung to. Healthy things can be clung to. And you're not necessarily supposed to let go of the healthy things, the good things, but it is possible to let go of the clinging to them. So that distinction is very important. And so, you're supposed to, people might look at certain Buddhist teachings and say, I'm supposed to let go of all my money. And, I'm supposed to live a life of poverty like the monks, the monastics. And maybe that's right for you. I'm not going to say it isn't. But what you were asked to do is let go of the clinging that we have towards wealth and property and things. How much, I'm clinging to my partner. I'm supposed to let go of my partner now, this letting go. Don't let go of your partner unless it's unhealthy. But let go of the clinging to the partner. And some people have trouble with that idea. But the clinging to the partner is where the suffering can come. And then we don't have the flexibility to change with the changing nature of the relationship. We can't be fluid with it, or it's hard for their partner to be gone for a long time because we're holding on tight to security or to affirmations or all kinds of things that the relationship means. So to begin releasing the grip in the mind doesn't necessarily mean we abandon the things of the world or the people of the world, but we are abandoning the way in which we're holding on to them and gripping them. And so that's one important distinction to make. The other is that the idea of letting go by itself can seem like a form of deprivation. Like, I'm just supposed to let go and I have nothing then. You know, nothing's, you know, it's just like, or there's no imagination, there's no sense of what follows the letting go. Why should I, you know, I understand the letting go of clinging is good, but if I let go, then there's, you know, it's blank. And I'm scared of blank. I'm scared of nothing. I'm scared of not having these things that I have. I'll have nothing. I'll be destitute. But the corollary to letting go that I think really helps the movement of letting go and helps us understand why it's helpful is that we let go in, we can let go, and then we can, as we do that, let go into something. So if you let go of anxiety, then you can let go into the resulting peace, the ease that's there. If you let go of needing of conceit, you can let go into a sense of maybe inner well-being that's there, that doesn't need anything. Or you let go into, so if you let go of your thoughts in meditation, you know, if you just let go of your thinking in meditation, then, you're kind of left with nothing, you know, you're blank kind of. But the opportunity when you let go of your thoughts is to let go into the resulting calm of the mind, or let go into a subtleness or a calm in the body, or settling into the body. So it isn't just a matter of letting go, but it's also what you can gain by letting go. And it's letting go into, I liken to, if you're holding on to the diving board in the pool, and then you let go of the board, you let go into the refreshing water. Hopefully it's refreshing. And so there's a kind of a positive reinforcement for letting go because of the goodness that's gained. And the more we have a sense that there's something good here to let go into, there's something, you know, there's a sense of contentment, well-being, peace, wisdom, non-agitation. There is maybe, it could be access to states of friendliness, kindness, love, compassion, generosity. There's all kinds of things can live within us that are there, and if we can let go into them, then the whole idea of letting go is much more appealing. And it isn't just a matter of deprivation. We're not left with, you know, rather than being left with nothing, we're left with something. And so the other thing to think about with letting go is that it's something we train ourselves to do. For some people, most of us can spend a good part of a lifetime, sometimes decades, reinforcing certain tendencies. And the things that we do over and over again become stronger. They become habits, they become grooves, the muscles of getting engaged with those things are gotten stronger and stronger. So if hanging on, clinging, has become the predominant movement of the mind, we're always clinging and wanting and hanging onto things, and you can see that sometimes just in the nature of our thinking, how much wanting there can be sometimes in thoughts. If you get a sense of that and then take a kind of calculate how many total seconds of clinging you've done over the last 20 or 30 years compared to the total number of seconds that you've been letting go, I bet, you know, chances are for most people, it's rather dramatic, the difference. What we've been practicing over and over and over again, and practice makes perfect, is clinging, holding on. And so what we need to do is we start practicing the opposite. We can practice letting go. And that can be start with small things. Maybe it starts first by noticing the situations in daily life where you're already letting go. There's no successful human life, even mildly successful, like, you know, getting through the day, without doing some letting go. You might not think that's what you're doing, You come to the, you're going up and the traffic light ahead of you turns yellow. So you're in a hurry to get somewhere, and the compulsion, the holding on to get somewhere is so strong that the tendency is to push right through and hope that no one sees that it's, you know, that really it had turned red. You'll just tell them it was yellow. Or you let go of the push to rush, and you let go and you wait for the, you stop, and that's letting go, to stop. I was, this evening, just before the sitting, was contemplating that, well, this is what I'll, my theme for today, to let go. And my smartphone was in my pocket. And it gave a little ding. Some monumentally important message had come through. And I could feel the impulse, I gotta find out what it is, gotta check. And I could feel that impulse, and I kind of went through a very quick kind of little calculation in my mind. What do I want to reinforce? What practices do I want to reinforce? Where's my well-being? Am I actually going to end up feeling better in some way by pulling out the phone and looking at that screen and seeing what it is? Or I'm actually fairly content right now, just sitting here and contemplating letting go. You know, maybe this is the time to let go of needing to pull out the phone and look and just stay on topic, you know, stay on the topic of letting go. How many times do you look at your smartphone unnecessarily? How many times do you fill empty space and pull it out and look? Is that the best use of your time? If you let go of looking at your phone, is there something better that you can let go into? Can you let go? Is there available to you here and now some goodness, something good? Letting go into just being mindful. Letting go into being aware of the situation. Letting go of being, letting go into relaxing a little bit. Maybe you have layers of relaxation your body can do, and it's nice to relax. You can let go into looking around and connecting, even if it's just visually, to the people around you. And consider maybe these are good people, and consider, you know, connect to your kindness or your care or your friendliness to the people around you. It doesn't have to be a big deal. It could all be silently done. No one has to know that you're being friendly. Friendly thoughts are friendly. But it's probably a lot better for you and for your heart to do that than to check the news on your phone or whatever you do. So you can start. What I was trying to say is that you probably do already let go of things in your daily life. You're sitting at dinner with people, and that ding on your phone comes out. And in that situation, you realize, I'm going to let go of looking. I'm having dinner with these people, and we're talking about important things. And then you can kind of say, well, there, I did it. I let go. Isn't that great? And there might be many situations in daily life, small ones, where you're already letting go. To appreciate that, to recognize that as a movement of letting go, strengthens the ability to let go. And then you can practice in more and more difficult. Start with what's relatively easy, but find things that are easy to let go of that would be useful to let go of, or would be useful to practice letting go at. Because what we're trying to do also is develop that capacity to do it. And as we develop the capacity and exercise the act of letting go, we also want to learn what gets in the way of doing it. What are the beliefs that kick in? What are the emotions that kick in? What are the fears that come in that say, no, I can't do that. I can't let go, or I shouldn't let go, or, you know, I deserve that. And, you know, all these kinds of things come along that will say, no, I don't have to let go of this. This I should hold on to. Part of the whole practice of letting go is to take an honest look at all the things that keep you from letting go, to understand yourself better. So you're not necessarily asked, you know, to dutifully let go just because you're supposed to let go, but the movements of letting go, of trying to let go, and coming up against places where it's hard, becomes a valuable time of self-understanding and self-reflection, to be a mirror. What's going on here for you? And you still might decide not to let go, but you've understood much better what's going on for you. If you understand that what's your beliefs, your emotions, your fears, whatever it might be that's preventing you from letting go, if you feel how limiting those are, then it might be much easier to let go of the thing that you thought of letting go of. So by practicing letting go in daily life, practicing letting go in small ways, you can look at, small ways, but increasingly more difficult. At some point, you're going to bump up against a place where it's relatively, not a big deal, but you start seeing the beliefs and feelings that are operating that say, no, I can't, I don't want to, it's not just too difficult. So I may give you another little example. Coming to IMC, we have asked that people who come here not park on the street here, on the Birch Street, because of the neighbors, and we become a nuisance for the neighbors. So we ask of people who hear this announcement to now park further away than on this one-way block of Birch Street. And so it occurs to you, that means that a lot of people are going to park for a little bit, have to go a little bit further. What if I maybe park even further away, so it'd make it easier for the people who maybe can't walk very much? And then comes up the thought, no. I'm in a hurry. It's going to be dark. I've had a long day. I deserve it to be parked closer. And so I don't want to walk so far. And anyway, if I park two blocks away rather than one block away, I'll be late for being mindful. And so so you might see, what would happen if I look at this? What's going on with me here? If I let go of parking as close as I can, what happens? What do I see about myself? What trains of thoughts, what beliefs, what needs, what concerns, what fears are operating? And something as simple and no big deal thing about parking one block or two blocks away might in itself be kind of a silly thing to tell you to let go of. But it's not silly if it's part of the process of self-understanding. And choose something that's relatively easy to begin looking at that. And for that purposes, you might choose actual things that you don't need to let go of, but you just want to do the exercise temporarily. Let's see, if I try letting go of this, what do I learn about myself? What I learn before I let go, while I'm letting go, and after I let go. And Gil said, let go into something. Well, if I let go of, parking one block away, do it two blocks away, what can I let go into? I can let go into perhaps taking a nice brisk walk to IMC, so when I arrive, I'm a little bit more awake. I've gotten energized a little bit, and it's much better for meditation. It's a nice thing to let go into, and then be in your body and go. Then there's, what do we do when we can't let go? I would suggest that we can always let go of something. And one thing we can let go of, if we can't let go, then we let go of the need to let go. If we can't let go, or we let go of the of the judgments around ourselves, I can't let go, and I'm supposed to let go. So we can let go of kind of all this extra stuff around it, which is making the situation worse. And so you can at least do that. So you can just be someone who clings happily or with more ease or something, it's unfortunate that I cling, but I'm not going to make it worse. And then you don't want to be just content to just cling when the clinging is unfortunate. So what can you do about that? This is a good place I found to let go into the clinging. Let go into the feeling, the sensations, the muscles of holding on. Where in the body is there a somatic experience of clinging? Is it in your muscles? Is it in your brain, in the mind, in the heart, in the belly? Where is it when you're really holding on to something and you can't let go? Chances are you'll feel some physical corollary, some place where it's actually being held. And to let go into those feelings so you feel them more acutely. So you've given up letting go of it, and now what you can do is you're going to really get to know it. You're going to drop into it and feel it and be with it. And that does a number of things. It allows you to begin understanding it and seeing it more clearly. There's something, and as you begin to feel or sense clinging more fully, the limitations of the clinging becomes more and more evident. And you'll find that there's almost like the more awareness you give, the more aware you are of the holding pattern itself, the more you'll notice that within the holding, there is already a movement to relax and to let go. It's kind of like you're giving breathing room to it. And it's like if you have a really tight fist and you're really upset with something, really angry with something, at somebody, and you're really kind of like just can't let go of your fury and indignation and self-righteousness and all the good ones. and you're not going to let go of this, and you know your whole identity is tied up in the fury. And then you're going around like this, metaphorically. And then someone comes along and say, "Hey, my friend," and they just kind of like hold your hand like this with their open hand. They come from the open hand on the palm, come from underneath, and hold your tight fist. Chances are, just being held that way, they're not telling you to let go or to relax, but just being held that way, you feel it and sense what's going on better. Your attention goes into the hand that's clenched, and your mind goes away from the thoughts of fury, the thoughts of self-righteousness, the thoughts of, you know, all these things, the ideas that we're holding on to, that's really the heart of it. And so the certain kind of, at least the fist now, begins to relax and soften when it's held and supported. So to come with awareness, to let go into it and hold it or see it with awareness, shifts the inner ecology away from the thoughts, which is really where the center or the fuel for clinging resides, somehow or other, into the actual experience. It's kind of like holding the fist. And it might take a while, but then the belly begins to relax, if that's where you're feeling, the shoulders begin to slowly soften, the jaws begin to unclench, the tightness around the eyes begins to release a little bit. And you didn't even know that the stomach and shoulders and jaws and eyes were tight because you're so concerned with what you need to have and get and not let go of. But what happens if you drop into the somatic experience? Let yourself cling and let go into it. Feel it. The other thing that does is that it's actually kind of a movement of self-empowerment to do that. You're engaged in a choiceful act that's distinct from the clinging itself. You're for a few moments saying, "I'm not going to be the slave to this clinging. I'm not going to be, the clinging's not going to be in charge of me. I'm going to turn the cards around and I'm going to really be and feel it. I'm the one who's in charge a little bit. I'm going to be and feel it and be here with it." And that's a healthy movement of the mind. And that begins also to begin pull away a little bit the entanglement, the tightness of the clinging that's there. The fact that we've kind of changed how we're relating to it all and kind of claimed our mind in a fuller way. So, and finally, about letting go, if letting go still seems like a terrible idea, you know, an unattractive idea, the idea of letting go, it just seems like these Buddhists don't understand. There's a very simple principle that of letting go, which I think is always good. It's always good to try to let go this way. Let go of making it worse. Let go of making the situation worse. Whatever is happening, don't make it worse. It might be difficult, challenging. Don't make it worse. Don't, if you're angry, don't, you know, throw daggers. verbal daggers. If you're afraid, don't then, I don't know, there's all kinds of unhealthy things you can do. Don't make it worse. So if let go of making any tendency to make the situation worse. And that will save a lot of problems. A lot of people respond to what goes on around them and they make the whole situation worse. In unkind words, unkind acts, in thoughts, in all kinds of ways. So letting go, relinquishment, releasing is a very important and very useful practice, capacity to develop and learn. And so I've offered, the intention in offering these words today was to offer a variety of different ideas around letting go that would be could be used for you to reflect on this topic, to think about it now, and think about how it works in your life, the value it might have, how you might do it, maybe have conversations with friends about this strange talk on letting go that you heard and you'd like to share it, you know, these ideas and your relationship with letting go and what you've learned about letting go in your life and how you let go. Because what I really would like to do out of these talks when I give them is to offer things that really you take with you to engage, reflect, practice, and kind of they come alive in you because you're engaged with them. I'm not interested in just giving out ideas here. Well, that was a nice idea. So, we have about 15 minutes, and if you have any thoughts and questions and...
So Gil, you've talked about letting go off and letting go into, but there's also wise letting go and unwise letting go.
Yes.
What could you use to know in a situation whether it's a wise letting go or unwise letting go?
Sometimes it's, if you're unsure, don't let go right away, but rather investigate the situation, consider it a little more deeply. So I've done this, and I know other practitioners have done this, who have been too quick to let go. And letting go too quickly is without the learning that needs to be done first. Sometimes it's detrimental. It can come back and bite you even. So if you're unsure whether you should let go or whether it's healthy or not healthy, don't let go and just spend a little bit of time getting to know the situation better, yourself better, what's going on. That's one thing. The other is, so how do you know that something is... So the other thing is what I said earlier, we always want to let go of the clinging to something, right? So you can always let go of the clinging, but you don't have to physically or, you know, literally stop using or stop doing the activity. So the question of whether something is healthy or not healthy is a second level question. It's always unhealthy to cling. But whether you stop doing what you were doing, so like exercising is healthy. Some people cling to exercise. And some people exercise because they cling to their youth and their beauty and their sexual appeal. And that's why they want to, you know, they exercise. But if they let go of their clinging, well, then I might as well stay home and be a couch potato and eat chips. you know, I let go, now that I let go of exercising with so much time and effort, and the chips are good. Exercise is good. Please keep doing it. But what you've changed is the motivation for doing it. And you found a healthier motivation. So, I don't know. I don't think my answers are very adequate to you, but for now I think they'll have to do.
This is a very relevant question in Silicon Valley. I think somebody asked you before, too, a few weeks ago, because people are faced with decisions all the time, like by the minute.
Yes. So you can pass the mic back.
Hi. Can you hear me okay? So you've been speaking of situations in which you have the power to decide to let go, and I've been thinking a lot about death, where you don't have the power, you know, you're not in control of it. And particularly, I've experienced the death of 4 loved ones in a fairly short period of time,
yes.
6 years. And I have a really hard time letting go. I mean, they die,
right?
And I have to let go in a certain way, but
right.
emotionally it's very, very hard to let go.
Yes.
So I just wondered your thoughts around death and
uh-huh.
letting go. And
Yeah, I'm sorry for your losses. So I'm not sure, you know, there's so many different aspects of what you're bringing up. So one is that especially people want to have control. And so sometimes we have to let go of the need for control of situation in life, what it is. Sometimes we have to let go of the expectation we have that there's never going to be any loss. Some people live kind of naively and have no sense, no realistic sense that actually dying and death is a relatively normal part of life. And it's not, you know, it's and to look upon it as completely out of the blue, it's a crime that it should happen, makes it worse. The other is people's relationship to grieving needs to be looked at. And to grieving, the feeling of loss that comes, and what are the beliefs that come in, that are coming into play. So there might be certain beliefs we have that are not really so useful or helpful, and we have to learn to let go of them. We have to also, and then sometimes with a lot of loss and the pain of that, new unhealthy beliefs come into play. And so now there's beliefs that the world is just a dangerous place, much more dangerous than before, and we're white-knuckling every day because we think, what am I going to lose next? And so a whole new pattern of thinking is kicked in. And so we have to kind of be really careful and notice what is going on here. There might be that we have ideas that we shouldn't be grieving anymore. Six, you know, how many deaths you said in 6 years? 4, that's a lot. And so, you know, here we go again, and I should have been over it by now. Or I don't know what goes on with people. And so it's letting go of the need to be in charge of the grief and letting go into the grief and allowing a certain kind of loss of control and allowing the body to grieve in a healthy way. And there's a way and really to allow grieving to move and to flow. It's kind of like the heart knows how to grieve if we allow it, if we support it. And a lot of people don't know how to support their own grieving. And so sometimes it becomes much more difficult. And so it's letting go of, you know, getting busy or letting go of avoiding the grief or letting go of the beliefs that letting go of the beliefs that I shouldn't feel this loss or all these things. And for something like that, you know, the other thing which sometimes we let go of is, I feel a little delicate saying this, so I don't want to imply that's for you, but there is a kind of a feel-good bias that exists in certain corners of our society, that we should always be feeling good, and it's something wrong with us if we're not feeling good, and it plays itself out with the topic of depression. There are certainly debilitating and unhealthy ways of being depressed that needs medical care, psychiatric care. But some depressions are actually part of a healthy functioning of the human being, that it's actually important to get depressed sometimes. Not like you should go out and look to how to get depressed, figure it out. but that depression sometimes is a really important signal of the system trying to come back into homeostasis. And something is trying to work itself out, and so there's a kind of a healthy depression that sometimes we have to just live with. And if we just think that I have to feel good all the time, and if I don't feel good, then I'm kind of failing, and people are not going to like me, and I better go get Prozac. also with grieving, people might have some ideas that. It's wrong somehow, I'm not doing it right if I feel the pain of that, year after year for a long time. But there might be an ache from that loss that maybe will always be there, and not to make it a problem, and so to let go of it needing to be different. And then life can be a lot simpler. Fighting it or making it a bigger story than it is, just feeling the ache. And so those are some thoughts I have for you. I don't know if there are those also I don't think are very adequate as a response to such a big question, but hopefully that'll do for now. Thank you. Over here, it's just close by.
Well, the thing that you said that struck me the most was that sometimes you need to let go of letting go. And I have a tendency to think when I recognize that I do need to let go of something, that I have to do it now. And it can end up being something to beat myself up with. And so occasionally I stumble into the state of letting go. And there's a great sense of relief. And once I'm able to do that, I can recognize that the letting go can happen in increments.
Beautiful.
And that's fine.
That's wonderful. I love hearing that. The other thing that I've learned about letting go from my own painful experience is because I did so much letting go as part of my Buddhist practice, you know, and when you sit and meditate, there's a lot of letting go. It sits here when you sit and meditate. Sit for 45 minutes and not move, and kind of let go of all kinds of impulses, all kinds of thoughts, all kinds of things that come along. Just keep letting go to be here. Just keep showing up. It's a great training ground for letting go. So I've done a lot of letting go in my life. And it became a little bit of a kind of default to let go. And relatively easy at times. And two things I learned about doing it. One was that I learned that certain things I shouldn't let go of because I wasn't learning. And the one thing that was most important for was my anger. I was able to let go of anger. Great. But in doing that, I was never able to understand my anger. And you really want to understand it and get below it and what triggers it and what's really going on more deeply. And I was kind of bypassing that because I was just letting go. So I actually stopped letting go of my anger for a while in kind of, you know, careful situations so that I could look at it and see what was underneath. And that was very helpful for me. The other thing I learned is that if I let go of something, and if I didn't feel a little smidgen, at least a teeny bit of joy or lightness or ease, I hadn't let go. Because I would let go and be neutral. And there was even at some times when I remember, I kind of congratulated myself, Gil, you let go, that was good. And, you know, yeah, I did it, you know, everything's cool, it's good. But really, I was just neutral. And inevitably, it came back and bit me. It somehow came back. Because it wasn't being neutral is not really letting go. There had to be a physical, or for me physical, maybe not for other people, but a physical, little bit uplifting force, kind of little bit of joy with the letting go. It had to feel good. There had to be a feeling of, oh, this is good to let go. Ah. Ah. This, without that ah, something. Watch out, Gil.
I just wanted to ask, if you think there are different qualities of letting go, do you think the ones that were meaningful, where you felt, you know, a little joy, that there was an insight connected to it, or what do you think distinguishes?
That's a nice question. I don't think I've ever had much insight after letting go, in the letting go, except how good it is to let go. But sometimes I've only been able to let go when I saw what was going on. So that's why mindfulness is so helpful. You stay present and look and see. There were sometimes when, as soon as I saw what was really going on, the letting go happened by itself. And that's a beautiful feeling. That's really cool. I think it's so much more wonderful when the letting go does itself rather than I'm the one who's letting go. And so, and that comes from, you know, really having strong mindfulness practice, because if you really learn how to be strongly, clearly mindful of what's going on and really see clearly, almost like there's natural forces inside of us that will be letting go. It's like the hand thing, right? The hand wants to relax. I don't have to want it to relax. I mean, I don't have to do it, but... And so there's... So now I forgot the question.
Just that, what distinguishes a really good letting go from a unsuccessful letting go?
Well, I think the feeling tone, it feels pleasant, it feels like a relaxation, it feels like an improvement, like there's breathing room finally, and I can, you know, like there's a relaxation and opening up, and it just feels, so, you know, just, ah, like, you know, it's a new day. Something like that. So maybe one more? They've been trying, they're up here in the front they've been trying, so if you can pass the mic to the front.
No, I think yours is more important.
So in a context of being with others who might not have a practice,
yeah,
and something comes up, something arises where there's really clinging, what kinds of kind of gentle prompts or questions or ways of framing something can create an opportunity instead of causing more harm? And the context is my dad, who, like, if you try to give him a hug, he just goes like this and gets really upset, like angry, if I try to give him a hug, if it's not like Christmas Eve or New Year's or whatever. It's really interesting. So this happened last couple of nights. And
I would just simply let go of giving him a hug. He doesn't want that. He probably, and figure out what he does want. Figure out, you know, what little movement of love, friendliness, warmth, he does appreciate.
Well, it did come up. It was a great conversation last night, but there's something in there that I'm realizing, well, there's something where there's an opportunity. But so what kinds of, like, prompts or questions in an environment that you think
first
might
you
be
have to ask
helpful?
Permission. First you should ask permission.
Yeah, that was an agreement, yes.
Dad, you know, I've noticed this thing about you. You cling when I want to hug you, and that, you know, it's, you know, kind of a peculiar thing, and you know, if you're interested, we could talk about it a little bit, and maybe there's something to understand there. And are you interested? No.
And it went many steps down the road, and I'm like, going, something's going on here. And so
he was willing to have the conversation with
you.
Yeah. Oh, beautiful. Yeah. Ah, beautiful. Yeah.
And it came down to, well, if he hugs too much and they're not special, they don't mean anything.
Oh, maybe. So that's what he believes.
And so...
You might ask, some questions around some things like that you might ask, and that's what you're asking me for questions, is when did this pattern start? When did he first learn this idea or come up with this idea? And what was going on at that time in his life? And it might be the conditions of a time or lessons he learned from other people or from his relatives, or there might have been situations where things were really difficult, and maybe when he was in the military, or maybe he was, you know, something. And so sometimes you ask, when did all this, you remember when this kind of, you had this first started having this attitude and understanding?
Yeah, it was when his mom died of cancer when he was 15, yeah.
Yeah, so his mom died of cancer when he was 15. So there's a deeper need than hugging or not hugging. You know, so how do you meet that deeper need? How do you accompany? How do you support? How do you offer some basic human accompanying with his deeper suffering? And you have to be very careful, this thing about wanting to fix anyone or change anyone, right? Don't you think you know that? Sometimes just accompanying. And for me, what I did with the fist and the hand is so powerful idea that you know, just accompany. And, you know, let someone feel like you're there with them. And just that people feel like you recognize it, and even if you don't have to tell them, you recognize that you're there with them and that part of them, and they'll find a way then.
Yeah, when you said that there's a deeper need there, what's that deeper need that's more important than that? The light just went on around that. So thank you so much. Well, thanks.
Great.
I'll send you a $200 for the therapy session that just happened right there. So.
Oh no! If that's the exchange, my cost is a lot higher. So, but, you know. But I'm not in business, so it's okay. Don't worry. So thank you all. And I do hope that you give some, this next week, maybe you give some real consideration, experimentation and practicing of this letting go, and see how it's useful for you and how it can be an improvement and how it, in some situations, will protect you from making it worse. Thank you.